side Fame Valley, and the leader just jumped violently to the right there.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
This is Racing Across America. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming events here at Capital OTB. Appreciate their support during their championship meet. And yesterday, the last couple of days at Gulfstream, interesting, as they had a planned mandatory payout in the Rainbow yesterday. So Friday comes into the last race, big pool that, you know, everybody's anticipating is going to carry to Saturday. And that big pool on Friday, they went into the last race with one potential single winner. The horse at 30-1 goes wire to wire and takes down the entire pool. So that took a little of the air out of the balloon for yesterday's mandatory payout. But yesterday during the handicapper report, Brian Addo said he was anticipating $1 million regardless, just the mandatory. And Gulfstream being Gulfstream, that Rainbow Six down there is as popular, it's more popular than any place else. It's the spot for that jackpot bet. And sure enough, we were sitting in here yesterday doing OTB Live in the afternoon, and that pool crept up, and went over $1 million. And then it wound up a little crazy towards the end. There was the upset in the stake race that certainly the Chad Brown runner and the Todd Pletcher runner, larger in value proposition, were the horses that were clearly going to take the action, and Clear Vision got it done at 10-1. That upset things, and then there was a couple other, there was at least one other price in there. And I'm just looking, I think this was a Marty McGee article from the Daily Racing Form. Actually broke down. The winners were 5-2, 4-1, 10-1. That was the one that beat the two big favorites in the turf, 27-1, 4-1, and 4-1, and it winds up paying over $100,000, $100,800 on a 20-cent bet. So they didn't get the monster carryover, but the folks who successfully went through the sequence yesterday wound up with a pretty good payoff, regardless. And as I say, that is. Absolutely unique to Gulfstream, that a mandatory, as I was talking to Brian yesterday, I said, I'm sure they'll put money in. It was hard to imagine $1 million, though, without anything in the pool. Now, they were guaranteeing $250, but still, you knew, again, people were going to have studied it already, and there was a mandatory, but they love that Rainbow down at Gulfstream, and so they plowed the money in, and again, with a couple of results you had to search for a little bit, it wound up to be a very, very nice payout, regardless of the fact that there wasn't the carryover. So, as they say, an interesting couple days at Gulfstream with the potential big carryover, and then somebody grabbing that and then sticking another $1 million in the pool as well with the mandatory potential. All right. We will look at that stakes race upset from Gulfstream in a minute. But first, stakes recap. Wanted to go back to first up, Aqueduct, and yesterday's Safe Florida Sandy. Result wound up, I guess, a little controversial. As I sat in here, I was kind of agreeing with the stewards on the first looks at the head-on. Horse on the Rail does kind of get jammed up by My Boy Tate, but as they replayed, The three battle station kind of makes a little squeeze on the one right here. The one is going to get kind of squeezed. Oh, and the three kind of starts that. And then Eric Cancel, who was on the subsequently disqualified My Boy Tate, said that that kind of put him in a jackpot because they were squeezing him, and he subsequently squeezed the other horse. Stewards pinned it on My Boy Tate. If you look, I get it. You can see the head on down in the bottom right. Something had to change as far as I'm concerned, because the horse on the rail really does get squeezed pretty good. But again, the one is also right here. The one gets squeezed out, three from the rail, and then subsequently the rail horse gets squeezed. And so at first look, as I said, I thought, I think the horse has to come down because the horse on the rail did get squeezed. But yeah, it was more complicated than that. I didn't have a real problem with what the stewards wound up doing. They eventually disqualified My Boy Tate, placed that one fourth. But again, it was, as I say, it was a little more complex perhaps than just that quick. And the stewards were looking at all of that. They eventually just decided, though, to take the winner down. Everything else stayed the same. But what did that mean? Subsequently, the move-up was Lobster for Eddie F's. Eddie F's Racing, based up in Saratoga. Of course, Eddie F's restaurant up there, great for lobster rolls and fried clams and whatnot. They had Chowda, Lobster's sibling, run pretty well a little earlier on the card. Ed Fazone was on with us this summer. That was fun. And Ed said, and mentioned, he may have mentioned it the last time I saw him, I think. But he mentioned it again. There was an article of Dave Grenig, I'm assuming, yesterday, the recap of this. He said they have a sibling to both Chowda and Lobster called Oyster, a two-year-old, that they're looking forward to seeing race this coming year, in the next few months, potentially. Certainly, you would think by Saratoga. But Lobster gets moved up, goes 2-for-2 over the last couple of races, both stakes races. Also beat, after a really ding-dong stretch duel, beat My Boy Tate in the New York Stallion Series back on December 5th. Then comes back yesterday in the Safe Florida Sandy and wins on the DQ. But again, 2-for-2 so far, the end of last year, the beginning of this year for Lobster and Eddie F's Racing. Javier Castellano up from Florida to take the ride in the stakes race and benefits from the DQ there. Battle Station winds up second. Chestertown third after the DQ, and My Boy Tate gets moved down to fourth. And as I say, it was, had a little buzz, and just from reading some of the post-race follow-up articles and whatnot, I think some people may not have agreed with what the stewards did. I was pretty much in their camp. I think something had to change there. Some other people may not have been in that camp, but I think it was maybe a little bit controversial as to how it shook out. And as I noted, reading some of the comments, everybody seemed to feel like maybe it was a little more complex than at first blush. But again, Lobster winds up the winner there, and always like to root for the locals, and they wind up taking down the prize in the feature yesterday. And I mentioned it on TV yesterday. I mentioned it again this morning. It was a couple of Saratoga-based outfits taking the late double at Aqueduct yesterday. Lobster wins the eighth race, again, owned by Eddie F's. And in the ninth race, it was Rebo's Valentine for Blue Streak Racing and Ray Handel. And Blue Streak, Tim McCoy. We've had him up with us on the set in Saratoga as well. And Tim, Saratoga guy, and Blue Streak Racing with some interesting horses. They had Rosa Veloce on the card yesterday as well, but they took the finale. So a couple of Saratoga-based outfits come down with the late double yesterday at Aqueduct. So, again, always like to see the locals do well. Down at Gulfstream, it was the Tropical Park Turf. And, again, we talked about in the handicapper support yesterday, and Brian noted it, and when I handicapped in the afternoon, I was right there. It looked like it was going to go between Value Proposition and Largent. I liked Value Proposition between those two. Value Proposition got going late as the number four horse, but too late, because by the time Value Proposition, you can see sitting third here and making a nice late run, but by the time he gets going, Clear Vision under Julien Lepereau has a little bit of a lead that just cannot be overcome. Clear Vision at 10-1 gets it done. Value Proposition second, Belgrano third, and Favored Largent runs fourth. I was surprised at the money Largent took. Largent was 70 cents to the dollar, 3-5, and hadn't been seen in almost a year. So, you know, it's Todd Pletcher down at Gulfstream with a really talented runner. But off of that scenario, boy, the 3-5 looked a little bit short. He winds up running fourth in there. But Clear Vision going out for trainer Matthew O'Connor. And let me just see if I have this right. Interesting story in and of itself, because this was the trainer's first stakes win and just his fourth win overall. Former assistant from the Marty McGee article, former assistant to Nick Zito before he went on his own back in 2020. So that's not bad. Your fourth win of the career winds up to be the Grade 3 Tropical Turf. You wind up with a graded stakes win to put win number 4 on your resume. And Clear Vision looked good yesterday. I had him right underneath the top two and said if you were looking for an alternative, he might be interesting. Came out of a win, two back, and then a second in the claiming crown. I should note the win two back, it was in a claiming race up at Belmont, and they claimed the horse for $25,000. So they claimed the horse for $25,000, stop down to the claiming crown in the last start and pick up second money there, and then they pick up first money in the $100,000 Tropical Park Tropical Turf yesterday at Gulfstream. So not a bad $25,000 claim that was made back in October, and now a couple of starts since, and a good second and a win in a couple of stakes races. So clever claim for the connections, and congratulations again to the young trainer on his, not just his first stakes win, first obviously graded stakes win as well. At Oaklawn in the stake yesterday, it was the Pippin yesterday, $150,000 for the ladies going a mile. I like Coach. Coach was a runner that early in the career, if you go back to the two-year-old season, had shown plenty of promise, had won the Rags to Riches at Churchill Downs. This was back in October of 2020. Followed that up with a third in the Goldenrod. Then subsequently, the three-year-old season didn't quite live up to that early promise. The two-year-old season didn't quite translate to the three-year-old season. Had a couple of okay starts, but not as promising as the two-year-old season. Ran a disappointing ninth in the Kentucky Oaks in the very end of April, and then laid off from that race until December 17th at Oaklawn. The comeback was pretty good. The number may be a little bit light, but it maybe indicated that the layoff got her head straight again, and she had the potential to get back to what we saw earlier in the career. So I used her in the top slot. Miss Bigley was the clear alternative, who had come from Southern California and tried stake at Churchill in her previous start. She had run third, but for Phil D'Amato, again, she was the likely challenger, and that's the way it worked out around the track. It was Coach and Miss Bigley. Coach, the number one horse, Miss Bigley, the number six, and they kind of duked it out most of the way, but Coach pulls away here at the end, and I think that bodes well. As I say, ended the three-year-old season with that optional claiming win on the return to Oaklawn off the fairly long layoff, and now strings this one together to be 2-for-2 this season at Oaklawn, but to kick off her four-year-old season in fine fashion with a stakes win down at Oaklawn. So we'll see. Brad Cox, trainee, wouldn't be shocked to see her stay on this, Philly and Mayer trail down at Oaklawn, but again, that kind of bodes well. Miss Bigley is the second choice. Coach was 8-5. Miss Bigley was 9-5. They run 1-2, get $13 for the exacta with the two logicals running 1-2 in there. But again, Coach, maybe one to watch. As I say, getting back to what we saw earlier in the career as a two-year-old filly, or potentially getting back, but certainly the last two seem to point to that potential. All right, I have my Eclipse Awards past performance packet, and Eclipse Awards ballots are due tomorrow, so I thought we'd just take a look at a few that are, slam dunks or potential slam dunks. I'm not. There's maybe one or two in here that I'm not sure. Well, there's maybe one in here that I'm not sure is a complete slam dunk. But I think some of these will definitely be on most, if not all, ballots. And why don't we start out by going to the Breeders' Cup Classic and watching Nix Go, the number five horse here, over Medina Spirit. Essential Quality runs third. Essential Quality was the 9-5 choice that day. Nix Go was the co-second choice with Hot Rod Charlie at 3-1. But Nix Go is going to get it done here. Chart margin just under three lengths. Medina Spirit second, Essential Quality third, Hot Rod Charlie fourth. And I think Nix Go, clearly a older dirt male horse. Before the Breeders' Cup Classic, won the Lucas Classic. Before that, the Whitney. Had the little confidence builder out at Prairie Meadows in the Cornhusker after the fourth in the Met Mile. Had run fourth in the Saudi Cup, but he'd won the Pegasus to start the year. So five wins and seven starts, three grade one wins. It just looks like in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So Nix Go, as I say, clearly male dirt horse. And you would think with the Breeders' Cup Classic win in that resume, probably horse of the year as well. So as I say, I think that's one of the ones that seems kind of an easy call and will be on most of the ballots, you would have to think. One that I'm going to be interested to see how it shakes out. But on the three-year-old male side, it wound up to be, I think the consensus was, pretty good year for the three-year-olds overall. Horses like Hot Rod Charlie and Mandaloon, and on the sprint side, Jackie's Warrior. But I think overall the resume for Essential Quality probably is going to put that one, give that one the hardware, the trophy for the mantelpiece when all is said and done for Eclipse voting. We're going to go back and watch, since I'm a homer, we'll go back and watch the Traverse, which was one of the nice performances from Essential Quality this year. Essential Quality, the number two horse, Midnight Bourbon, another good three-year-old this year. The number one runs second. In a close battle, the chart margin is just a neck, but Essential Quality was kind of known for doing just what he had to do to get it done, and then it really, again, nice ding-dong battle here does get it done over Midnight Bourbon, who, as I say, another of the nice three-year-olds this year. That Travers victory, a lifetime best buyer until the Breeders' Cup Classic, but it was a 107 buyer, his third in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He had a 108, but Essential Quality wins the Travers, wins the Grade 2 Jim Dandy, wins the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes, fourth, obviously, with a pretty good performance. He was only a length back fourth in the Derby, but he'd won the Bluegrass in the Southwest before that, 5-7 for the season with a couple of Grade 1s on the resume. So as I say, I think it's going to tilt in his direction. Be interesting to see when the votes are, the totals are put out, what Medina Spirit winds up with, because solid season as well. And on the three-year-old scene, the Kentucky Derby is always important to Eclipse voters and fans. And so you have the Kentucky Derby winner, but it's still not settled how that is going to play out. Good second in the Breeders' Cup behind potential horse of the year, Nix Go. Beat older horses in the Grade 1, Awesome Again at Santa Anita, albeit a relatively weak field of older horses. But, you know, it was a solid season for Medina Spirit with the Kentucky Derby. But it's just, I think voters will have a hard time pulling the trigger given the, you know, the whole Derby situation is in flux. As I say, I'll be interested to see what the totals are. To me, it tilts toward Essential Quality. Another one, though, that I think is clearly a slam dunk. I mean, this is one of those categories. Be a little bit shocked if there isn't a unanimous vote here. But on the two-year-old filly side, we'll go back and watch the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly. It will be number six, Echo Zulu, under Joel Rosario, who probably is looking at a jockey eclipse as well. I didn't pull out the human stats for this morning, but certainly Joel, a really good season. But Echo Zulu, 4-5 on this day, wins by over five lengths, and completes, you know, an undefeated campaign, 4-4. That included the Frisette down at Belmont. Obviously, we saw Echo Zulu twice up at Saratoga, won the Grade 1 spin away, and a good-looking maiden breaker in debut as well up at Saratoga. 4-4, all by daylight lengths, all with buyers are 90 of above, which for a two-year-old at that latter part of the season, pretty solid. So Echo Zulu for Steve Asmussen. Again, I would think we're looking slam dunk in the two-year-old filly category for that one. Speaking of the ladies, to me, another slam dunk, and it's going to be another category where I'll be intrigued to see where the bettors go and what the bettors do. Because, not bettors, the voters, because I think Eclipse voters place so much importance on the Breeders' Cup that I will, again, I'll be interested to see how the older dirt female turns out. But to me, Letruska had done enough by the time she had gotten to the Breeders' Cup. We're going to take a look, again, being a homer, I'll pull up a Saratoga race from her fabulous campaign this year. Letruska here is going to be the number six horse. Irad Ortiz on board. Wins by half a length over Bonnie South, Royal Flag. Third, Dunbar Road, Swiss Skydiver. There were some nice fillies in this race, and Letruska gets it done here. She followed that up with a win in the Grade 1 Spinster. She had, prior to the this win in the personal entrance, she'd won the Fleur-de-Lis down at Churchill, the Ogden Phipps at Belmont, the Apple Blossom down at Oaklawn. She won 6-8 on the year. Grade 1s, 1, 2, 3, 4 Grade 1s. The blemish on the record is the Breeders' Cup. And again, I'll be intrigued to see where the voters go, because so many of them do place extra importance, and to me, maybe sometimes too much importance, on the Breeders' Cup. But she winds up 10th in the field of 11. But if you remember that race, she was just run off her feet. They went out and set fractions 44 and change, 109 and change, and it was just an insane early pace. And, you know, she felt the brunt of that as they came around the turn and headed for home. So that the pace scenario just played out in a crazy fashion there, that you can draw a line through that. And I said it going into the race. I said going into Breeders' Cup weekend, it's hard to point to various horses and really feel like the eclipse is already settled. But with Letruska, it seemed like she had kind of done enough already. And I think that's going to be the case when we get to Eclipse vote. I think everybody's going to agree, but I'll be interested to see how the votes do parse out, because to me, that was a really spectacular campaign, and she had a complete excuse in the Breeders' Cup with the pace scenario. Just one more I wanted to look at, just because this one potentially got interesting the last week of the season, and that's the male sprint candidates. Going to pull up, we talked to Terry Finley, it was last weekend, after Flightline, day after Christmas, opening day at Santa Anita in the Malibu. Flightline tries to validate the first two spectacular wins of the career. A maiden special victory in April at Santa Anita, an optional claimer at Del Mar with a 105 buyer to start the career, a 114 in the second start. And then they say, let's sit off a few months and try a Grade 1 at the end of the year. And Flightline, as we will see here, the number five horse, gets it done over Baby Yoda. The chart margin, 11 lengths, 2-5 favorite, a 118 buyer. And I bring this up and I show this race because now Flightline is in the sprint candidate conversation. And I don't know whether anybody has a resume that really jumps off the page to say that Flightline shouldn't be solidly in the conversation. Aloha West, the winner of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I mean, in any category, you automatically go to the Breeders' Cup division there. Aloha West wins the Breeders' Cup sprint for the Catman Wayne Catalano at 11-1. The third of three consecutive triple-digit buyers, but had run second in the only other graded stake on the resume. That was the prior race, the Phoenix at Keeneland. Wound up with five wins in nine starts last year, including the Breeders' Cup sprint, obviously. But the other wins, optional claimers, an allowance race. So, again, is this a good enough resume? Dr. Schivel, who had a pretty good season last year as well, won the Grade 1 Bing Crosby early in the Del Mar meet, just missed in the Breeders' Cup sprint behind Aloha West. But that one had some problems and wound up well behind Flightline in the Malibu. Jackie's Warrior, I think that horse is a little bit interesting, but the big victories for Jackie's Warrior were in three-year-old limited races. Certainly, that it was a very nice sprint campaign for Jackie's Warrior. However, you could make the case there, but again, did have the big victories be in the age-limited races. American Revolution is a little bit interesting. American Revolution, a New York bred, and won the Cigar Mile. So I think that one is perhaps intriguing in there. If you want to parse out the Cigar Mile as being sprintish, the horse that ran second, the stablemate Following C, also perhaps a little bit intriguing. But overall, once again, I'm going to be interested to see where the voters go in the male sprint category, given what we saw from Flightline and the fact that, again, I don't know whether anybody else in that category this year jumps off the page as to having really solidified their claim to that category. So there are some ideas. Again, the ballots have to be in tomorrow. We will know on Eclipse Award night who winds up with the trophies. But it was a fun year last year. I think a lot of the divisions played out nicely. Up at Saratoga, things played out. And a lot of the prime candidates have Saratoga races on their memory, which was great because 2020 with no fans, I said it throughout the season, as we saw nice performance after nice, Tis the Law, and just some really nice performance, Swiss Skydiver up at Saratoga, summer 2020. It was a shame that fans couldn't be there. Last year, 2021, summer 2021, the fans were there, and it was, again, a really fun season as far as playing out with some of the top contenders as wound up here by the end of the year in the various divisions, running very well up at Saratoga. So that was good to see that the fans got to get another summer of really nice performances up there. All right, I'm going to take a break. Speaking of Eclipse Award winners, we'll have one on the show in just a little bit because they announced earlier this week Media Eclipse winners, and meaning television and writing, and it's a little bit of a different process. The Media Eclipse winners are, entries are sent in, and then there's a panel for each category, panel of three or four, experts in the category that look at the writing, that look at the television production, audio and multimedia, photography. I think our friend Mike Kane is still one of the members of the judging panel. I'm just checking. Yeah, Mike Kane, one of the judges on the photography side of things. But they decide, and those Media Eclipse Awards are announced a little bit early. They all go the same night and pick up their trophy, but we will have an Eclipse Award winner because announced earlier this week in the audio and multimedia category, it was a combination of a production between attheraces.com, which is a European entity, and our friend Pete Fornital teamed up with the At the Races folks. He is on their television side a lot, talking about American racing to the European audiences. But they did a nice multimedia internet package that interviewed prominent people about their most memorable Breeders' Cup moments. And it's a really nice-looking internet multimedia presentation, and it is multimedia, photos and audio and whatnot, but Pete picks up the award and the at the races team as well. So we'll have him in a few minutes. We've got about 10 minutes before we'll plug Pete in. In the meantime, we'll take a break. I'll come back, just do a little handicapping, maybe take a look at a little Oaklawn again today. I looked at Oaklawn last Sunday, and I think we gave out a couple of okay ideas. We'll try to do it again today. We'll be back this afternoon with OTB Live in an hour and a half or so. So we'll be looking live at a lot of this, but we'll give you a little head start right after the break with some Oaklawn thoughts. So stay tuned. Handicapping, and then a few minutes later, Peter Thomas Fornatal, Eclipse winner, Peter Thomas Fornatal. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
The best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region? Tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I should have said at the top of the show, if you're sitting in hunkered down watching the show this morning, keep it that way. I drove down from Saratoga, and I will say, if you have to go out, the major roads seem pretty well treated. I came down, I'm up in Ballston Spa, and I'm on a couple of, I don't know if they're major roads, but well-traveled roads. Those were taken care of. I'm about a mile and a half away from the Northway. So I hit a couple of those roads, and those were okay. And then the Northway was pretty well taken care of. That said, I'm looking at my thermometer on the dashboard. It's reading 27 degrees, and it's raining. It seems like it's pouring. And some meteorologist has to explain to me why that wasn't snow. But I guess maybe the upper atmosphere is warmer. I don't know. But whatever. As I say, the road was well-treated, but if you're tuning on to the weather forecast this morning, they've all been saying don't go out unless you have to. I will agree with that because it's a little white-knuckle-ish with the temperature being with it what it is and the rain. You don't know when the road is going to go the wrong way. So I came down the Northway. I and a bunch of like-minded folks were over in the right lane going about 40 miles an hour. I had given myself about triple time to make the trip this morning, and I was comfortable just kind of paddling along a little bit. There were a few folks out in the passing lane that were living life on the edge, I thought. But again, it's if you have to go, I think the roads seem to be treated. That said, if you don't have to go, wait. I think things are supposed to warm up by the afternoon, and probably a little safer to travel then, because as I say, even with them treated, given the situation of the rain and the temperature, you're not driving with a lot of confidence. It's not a pleasure. So again, just kind of if you have to, hunker down, enjoy us in your family room for the afternoon. And if you have to or you want to go out today, move it a little later in the day to when things do warm up a little bit in the afternoon. All right, that said, I'll jump in and take a look. Quick look through the late pick four at Oaklawn for this afternoon. Again, we'll be in live with OTB Live, taking a live look with the odds flashing up and whatnot. But the late pick four at Oaklawn today kicks off in race six, an optional claimer starter allowance, 8.5 furlongs the trip. At Oaklawn, I have it 7, 9, 3, and 5. I put Tashkent on top. Federico Villafranco comes in and moves into the Villafranco barn off a couple of wins at Remington. Horse just seems to be in good form. Has some okay Oaklawn form, only one win in 10 starts, but has been in the money six times in 10 starts. But coming in the good form and with some okay efforts at Oaklawn in the past, I'll put that one on top. Tashkent at 10-1 on the morning line. Original intent, and I will say, as I look through and handicapped, the morning line seemed a little funky here. This is one where this afternoon's going to be interesting to see how it does shake out. But I thought Tashkent was live at 20-1 on the morning line. Original intent goes out for our friend Marshall Graham in 10 Strike Racing. Hasn't been seen since last season at Oaklawn, but in the one Oaklawn start last year, won pretty convincingly. So might appreciate the return to Arkansas this afternoon. And again, given what we've seen, the layoff is clearly a concern and justifies maybe a little bit more of a price, but 10-1 looked a little steep there. Ego in the third spot comes off a try at Oaklawn to begin the season, moving down from Indiana Grand. It's an okay fourth place finish. I think the company this afternoon is going to be a little lesser, and so we might, with the one start this season under the belt and now the class move, that one could be interesting. And Robertino Diodoro has Colossi in the mix as well, also coming out of a third place finish last time here at Oaklawn. And also potentially a little bit interesting in here. Again, I'm going to be interested to see how the final odds shake out with the morning line in here, because the morning line to me on a couple of these seemed a little bit generous. In the seventh at Oaklawn, optional claimer with a calendar money condition, three quarters of a mile the trip. I have a 2, 4, 6, and 8. I put Sarah Harper on top. Goes out for Ron Maquette, lightly raced, maybe still some upside potential, but the four races so far have been pretty good. Started up at Saratoga, ran an okay third, then down at Churchill, strung a couple of races together, broke the maiden, went through a first-level allowance, tried this optional claiming condition last time, showed some punch before fading. I think with that one under the belt, the horse might be primed to break through this condition this afternoon. Break curfew. The race two back at Churchill was pretty good. The last time on the move down to Oaklawn, not quite as good. But I just thought, given what we've seen from this one overall, particularly the last few, I thought it would stack up nicely with this group. Northern Diamond in the third spot. Lots of early speed. I think this will be the pace scenario play. I think this horse will try to speed pop him. There's one or two others, including Sarah Harper, that also have potentially a little bit of early speed. So we'll see how it shakes out early, but Northern Diamond with the early speed could be dangerous. Seventh at Oaklawn, 2, 4, 6, and 8. Eighth race at Oaklawn, optional claimer with a C condition. Yeah, they're only racing for a purse of $102,000. Mile and 3/16. I have it 4, 1, 3, and 9. I put Night Ops on top. Just that this one shows up here. This is a bona fide stakes quality runner for Brad Cox. The last time out, well, two of the last three was in against Grade 1 company. Maxfield, Max Player, you look down, has faced horses like Dr. Post and Art Collector. I think this one is going to be a nice fit with this bunch this afternoon. And again, you put up $100,000, you wind up with horses like this. You're to Blame goes out. This horse is interesting. Goes out for Mike Dubb and Rob Attris. Comes down from New York. And again, I guess maybe Mike Dubb, he's clever playing the game. And they looked and said, hey, for these kind of races, they're putting up $100,000 down at Oaklawn. Let's get a runner down there. And so You're to Blame, interesting. A 10-1 on the morning line. They're not familiar with Mike Dubb down there, I guess. Fort Peck in the third spot, Robertina Diodoro runner, who also has some stakes credentials. In the eighth at Oaklawn, 4, 1, 3, and 9. And finally, the ninth race at Oaklawn, I have it 7, 9, 2, and 3. The 5 is also a little bit scary. But I thought Constitution as a sire intrigues me. And so I thought Taxit, the 7 horse going out for Steve Asmussen and Winchell Racing, I thought that one might be interesting in debut. Brett Calhoun has a second-time starter from McLean's Music that may benefit from the experience in the first start of the career. So race number 9 at Oaklawn, 7, 9, 2, and 3. All right, that gives you a look at the late pick 4 at Oaklawn. Again, we haven't seen scratches yet, so that'll all make a difference a little bit later on. But we will look live at that sequence later on OTB Live. But in the meantime, we'll take a break. When we come back, our friend Peter Thomas Fornital, as I said earlier, got to update the business card now. Eclipse winner, Peter Thomas Fornital. He'll join us in a few to talk about finding out about and just what the reaction is to earlier this week winning an Eclipse Award on the media side of things. So up next, Pete Fornital. Stay tuned.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill in the studio on a rainy, icy day in upstate New York, but heading downstate, we'll check in with Peter Thomas Fornital, as promised before the break, an Eclipse winner with us this morning. And Pete, I said, time to update the business card, Eclipse Award winner on there. I'm envious. I'm happy for you, buddy. And first of all, congratulations. Just talk about, before we get into the project itself, what it was like, how do you get alerted to that, and what it was like to find out you won an Eclipse Award?
It was truly one of the great professional days of my life. It just comes in as a phone call. Jim Gluckson, who coordinates with the judges, called me and said, hey, we've got some good news for you. We had submitted this piece a few months ago, a true team effort. My friends at attheraces.com, the UK based website that covers plenty of American racing and has a long association with the Breeders' Cup. Matthew Taylor, the editor over there months ago, came to me and said, I have this vision for a project. And I said, I love it. Let's expand it. Let's try to make this into a true mosaic of what makes the Breeders' Cup so special. And I told him, if we're going to do it right, we need to get my friend Naomi Tucker involved to help me get some of these interviews. So it was a team project. And that was so gratifying to me, to have won such an award with Matthew, who's been a supporter for a long time, and Naomi, who's a great analyst and interviewer and podcaster. I've had the pleasure of working with her the last couple of years over at In the Money Media. So it's not just a case of the work that I really enjoyed, putting together, and the event, the Breeders' Cup, one of my favorites, but to do it with the right crew of people too made it extra special for me.
Yeah, when the list came out earlier this week, I was really happy for you, and I know you do the work with At the Races as kind of an American correspondent, cluing in the Europeans on some of the insights on American racing, so it just made sense that you came together. I pulled up some screenshots, and I will tell people the easiest way to find it may be to pull up the Blood Horse article that announces the winners, and they link to your project. It's called Breeders' Cup Magical Moments, and we'll kind of show some of the screenshots I pulled up, which are really good looking, but it is a multimedia project. Just for folks who haven't seen it, define the project a little bit.
So the idea was we were going to go to 17 different racing luminaries and ask them about their most memorable Breeders' Cup moment. And we wanted to bring in horse players like Mr. Beyer, you see up there on the screen. Of course, he also fits in the journalist bucket. We talked to journalists and broadcasters. We spoke with jockeys. We spoke with trainers. And we wanted to create a full picture from the saddle, Lester Piggott. That was a really fun get that we got from the saddle to the stands to the shed row. And really create, hopefully, a picture of what makes the event so special from all the different perspectives involved. And we do have a pretty direct URL to check it out that'll be easy, okay, I think, for folks to remember. attheraces.com/Breeders' Cup.
Oh,
that'll
perfect.
Bring you right there.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Very good. And I advise people to check it out because it is it's good looking, and obviously a lot of work went into it. It's a mix of the written word and audio interviews, and you've just hit on some of the names. And Frankie Dettori, Rosina Pravnik, Mike Smith, Gary Stevens, Randy Moss. There we see Frankie, and you see a little bit of the, you can see the link down there to the audio portion. Nick Luck. But I'm curious, as I was reading the article and went through this, Jamaican cricket legend Michael Holding, how did he make the cut?
So Michael is also a racing analyst, and I had the pleasure pre-pandemic back in 2019 of working Royal Ascot with him. And I knew the name vaguely. Obviously, as an American, my cricket knowledge is not particularly strong. But we bonded right away, just the nicest man, long association with Michael Stoutsbourne. And so I was hoping, so we didn't tell people who to pick. We called them and, you know, they were giving us their honest answers to the question. But my thought with Michael was that he would pick Conduit or, you know, pick something from the Stout Yard, and Conduit, the two-time winner being the obvious one. And so, yeah, we hit pay dirt there when he had a great story about going to the races that day and having a lot of Jamaican friends there. And it really brought his it brought the gambler's perspective, because he talked about, you know, we all want to win no matter what when we go to the track and we're gambling. But there's nothing like winning and bringing your friends along for the ride. And that was his story. And I thought it really fit with the program.
And again, it is a really great list of people. I didn't mention Dwayne Lucas, Aidan O'Brien, just a great list of people. I'm curious, how did you guys decide who to talk to? How did you know, was the list much longer? Did you have to pare it down? But how did you eventually decide that these folks would make the cut?
Matthew's original idea, if I remember right, was we were going to find one person and get memories, okay? Like a top 10 list almost. And then the more we started thinking about it, the more we wanted to include more people. So almost from the beginning, it was like, well, how few people can we include and make this concept work? And of course, the list kept growing from 6 to 10 to 12 to 13 to the 17 we ended up with. So it sort of grew in that sense from the inside out. And it was almost just in brainstorming with me and Naomi and Matthew. Oh, well, we've got to get so-and-so. Or, you know, we've got Lucas with all his Breeders' Cup winners. That was a no-brainer. Dettori, it kept coming up. And then we'd say, oh, you know what? We don't quite have enough Europeans. I bet Matt Chapman would have a great story for us. And so we reached out to him, and he tells the story of Tisnau and Saki, which is a fantastic one. And it just kept growing in that regard. And there was one that we should have gotten that we didn't get. And I'm proud to say that Naomi has corrected this by interviewing Shug McGahey for her podcast, Talk Racing to Me, available right now at inthemoneypodcast.com. The one that we just ran out of time for, and I almost went back to the drawing board, but we couldn't bear to do it to the poor designers over there. We should have gotten Shug on Personal Ensign, but we have it now on Talk Racing to Me.
Ah, very good, very good. Well, hey, the Breeders' Cup Magical Moments Part 2. I mean, come on. As a guy who owned a television production company for years and have put together various kinds of projects and whatnot, just looking at this, and really, it's great looking and it's great work, and I'm just curious as to how long it took. What was the production process that went into it?
I'd say it played out over the course of about a month. You know, as it originally conceived, we were thinking of it that could be something that we would do in half that time. And this was also part of it being a team effort with Matthew working the whole back end, also helping to track down some of the contact info. And this is really where Naomi came in so handy. I mean, despite being a very young person, extensive contacts in the business, and with a couple of phone calls, was able to land very heavy hitters like Dettori and Aidan O'Brien. So because of divide and conquer, we were able to cram the work into about a month. And the only reason, it probably would have been less than that, but we did get to that point I mentioned before where it was like, well, wait a second. We got so close to it being comprehensive that then it was like, you know what? We can't do this without Lucas. We can't do this without O'Brien. Oh, the other one that got away that we came very, very close on, that if we were to ever do a part two, where he would have to be in there, was John Gosden. We had a couple of interviews scheduled and things just kept getting mixed up, and we never did end up landing him. But it was a great process, and I don't know what we're going to do for an encore, but I certainly look forward to working with this team again.
You've mentioned Naomi a couple of times, and just remind people, if for folks who aren't familiar with the name necessarily, if you've watched the Maryland Racing broadcast, she does the pregame and the paddock commentary down at Laurel and whatnot. Is she originally from Australia? Am I correct there?
You are correct that she's not from America, but she is from the Netherlands.
Oh, and okay.
But was educated in England, so she has a very international accent, we'll call it. But she's great. She's an inimitable broadcaster. She does the Talk Racing to Me podcast for us over on In the Money Media, InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Great work on the Laurel simulcast feed. And you may have seen her helping me out working for the Breeders' Cup themselves. She's the one who convinced me to go up in that hot air balloon, a ride from which I still have a post-traumatic stress disorder.
Was it tethered to the ground, though?
No, man. We were up there, whatever it was, 800 feet in the air, more than that. I just kept my eyes on her the whole time. It was like, all right, if I'm looking at one person, I'm not looking down, and I'll be okay.
Very good. I'm curious, you know, you interviewed a slew of people here, so I'm curious if there were any surprises, either in moments they picked or stories they had to go with the moments they picked.
I was a little surprised that Chapman ended up landing on a race won by an American horse. I figured that he would surely have picked one that went to the home team, but he had such a great story about it being his first Breeders' Cup in 2001 and coming over, and you know, he was rooting for and presumably had wagered on Saki, but he said just the whole vibe of the place and the grandstand shaking and Tom Erkin's brilliant "Tis Now Wins It for America" call, it made him a Breeders' Cup fan for life, and he's been to everyone he could since that day. I thought that was a surprising and good story. I was also surprised with, not at the choice, but with the conviction that Andy Beyer chose Sunday Silence Easy Goer as his most memorable Breeders' Cup memory. He said to me there in that same confident tone where he describes one horse as a lock or another horse having no shot, he threw it out there as there can't be any possible other answer than Easy Goer Sunday Silence. And I just love that.
And again, the project is really worth checking out if people haven't already. Go give it a look. And again, it's you and the team at the races and Naomi Tucker. And remind people, we of course had you on this summer and we talked a little bit about it then, but remind people your relationship with At the Races, Sky Sports, and as I say, you're kind of an American correspondent introducing or describing some of the American racing to the European audience.
That's a great description. I write a weekly Saturday tipping column, as they would call it, for attheraces.com, typically looking at the New York circuit, offering views and analysis generally speaking, I'm on about once a week on Sky Sports Racing, which you can't see here without some shenanigans. It's only available over there and on the website. It's geo-blocked in the U.S. Of course, there are workarounds to that if you're clever. But I cover whatever U.S. meetings are on. So we've been doing a lot of Gulfstream and Santa Anita and Aqueduct. And it's a gig I've had for a few years. And I used to go over about four times a year and do it right from those West London studios. Obviously haven't been to London in the last couple of years since the start of the pandemic, but I've actually had more work from them now that we set it up on Zoom. The reason I have this setup you're seeing me on today with an official background and lights and all that stuff, that this is my setup to do the TV over there.
Yeah, very good. I like that. And I commend you because over the past, 2 years now, the Zoom phone calls, I got to put together like the Zoom pamphlet for people because, again, as a television production guy, it drives me crazy that people put their laptop down on their desk, which means they have the camera tilted up. So most of the background is their ceiling. And it's like, no, folks, move the computer up, get a background like you have, do it right. Randy Moss has a great, he's got like an eighth pole behind him. There are a few people, you're doing it right, but I'm seeing way too many ceilings out there.
But low angles are not your friend,
exactly.
No matter how good looking you are. Yeah. Low angles are not going to be your friend. And headroom, that's the other one that I find myself. And then when people do it on the phone, it's you know, I almost have a script. Okay, could you turn your phone the other direction so we can see the full shot?
Exactly.
Anyway, it's these are the good problems to have when you're in the modern world of horse racing media.
Well, before we go, got a couple minutes left here, but talk a little bit about your plans for picking up the hardware, and I'm assuming that'll make the background in another couple of months. But what are your plans? Are you going out, and do you get to make a speech? I'm not sure about the media Eclipse Awards, and if so, are you fastly working on it?
So I doubt I get to make a proper speech. I think, especially in these times, it's going to be a lean in me. Maybe I get to walk up on stage and grab it. If I were to make a speech, there's three things I'd love to shout out if I had time. One would be to thank two friends and mentors who were certainly Eclipse Award winning, deserving, neither of whom I ever think did get one. Harvey Pack and William Murray, the racing writer, who are two of the guys who really, you know, helped me develop my style such as it is. Great friends and mentors and great people. I'd also love to shout out our buddy Steve Bick. I think I'll be perfectly honest, this award would mean a lot more to me if Steve Bick had won one.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's going to happen at some point. But you know, I'd love to shout out people like that who've done just so much in this category and mean so much to me. I'll definitely be out there for sure. You know, COVID permitting.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're going to do an outdoor thing at Santa Anita. It's Super Bowl weekend, so I was thinking it might be fun to go and just hang out all weekend, find a cool Super Bowl party to check out, get a couple of days in the Eddie Logan suite at Santa Anita. It won't be my next trip. My next trip is going to be the NHC. I just confirmed this week. Be very thrilled to be back out there, hopefully working with Steve, doing some broadcasting on that front. Are you going to be out there as well in the desert?
Unfortunately, you know, with the situation over the past couple of years, we talked about it, and it looks like we're making our returning for our annual trip to the Florida Derby, and we took the look at the NHC, and it was still kind of a situation where it's a no-go for us, unfortunately, because I'm envious. It, you know, we've mentioned it. I've sat in when we did out we're out doing the television for a couple of times. We sat in with you guys, Steve and you, out there, and I think we all had the consensus. It's the Horse Players Convention. It can't get more fun than that. So I'm envious you're going out there, but I'll be tuned in listening to you guys.
Hey, if you need a correspondent, I know how to turn the phone. I can't promise a backdrop this good, but we'll come up with something if you want some reports on the ground.
All right.
I'm happy to help you out.
All right. We'll keep that in mind. And Pete, before I let you go, you know, you've alluded to it and mentioned it a couple times, but anytime we have you on, just want to give you a chance to alert people again who may not already be aware, and I'm sure that's a dwindling audience, but talk a little bit about the In the Money podcast archive and format and library now and the number of podcasts you have available there. Just push the In the Money podcast.
I always appreciate that. In the Money Players Podcast is the name of the show. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on iTunes. We've grown now to where we have 10 shows. Matt Bernier Show, Naomi Show, we mentioned before. Owner's Box. We've got the In the Ring podcast with Acacia covering industry matters. So much good stuff on there. You can check it all out. And if you're not an iTunes person or a Spotify person, or, you know, if you're not a regular podcast person and want to check it out, go to our website. We've got a lot of great written content over there as well. The likes of Nick Tamaro providing daily analysis for Aqueduct, our man Eric Solomon covering Oaklawn Park. InTheMoneyPodcast.com is the place to check it out. If you have any questions, you want to get in touch with me, at Looms Boldly on Twitter, or through that InTheMoneyPodcast.com, there's a contact link on there that goes straight to my personal email and is another great way to get in touch with me. Drop a comment, subscribe, rate, review, do all those fun things, because as long as you all keep listening and enjoying, we're going to keep producing great horse racing content for you 7 days a week.
Very good. And again, highly recommended, the In the Money podcast library. And more importantly, for today's conversation, the At the Races and Pete Fornatale Project, Breeders' Cup Magical Moments. Again, Pete, you guys did a great job. Worthy and deserving award, because obviously you could see a lot of work went into it. It's a fun project that looks great. And as I say, when I went down the list of winners and saw your name there, I was really happy for you. So congratulations, great work, and happy to have you on this morning to talk a little bit about it. We will certainly talk again in the future.
Let's do it. Folks who want to check it out, attheraces.com/Breeders' Cup. Thank you so much for all your support, Seth, not just over this, but throughout the years. And I'm dead serious. If you want to talk a little NHC in a few weeks, holler.
Yeah, we'll probably work something out. That's not a bad idea. That'll get us out there by proxy. So we'll figure something out. Pete, appreciate it. Have a great day.
Cheers, my friend.
Pete Fornatale again. Eclipse-winning Pete Fornatale. And highly recommended to check out the project, because it's just great looking, but a lot of great info as well. A little mix of written content and the audio interviews. They did a great job. I'll just quickly go through some of the other Eclipse media winners. Feature commentary writing went to Sandra McKee for Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, A Jockey's Life. Baltimore's Adams sets riding record in 1930. News Enterprise writing went to the Blood Horses, Eric Mitchell, who we've had on the show before. Tracks join Rallying Cry to end cargo shipping. That's from last August. Television, not surprising in the television category. I mean, it almost every year goes to one of the big networks. But the Breeders' Cup for NBC won in television. Television features went to a NBC Sports Hot Rod Charlie feature. Photography went to Jeff Fughender. I'm sure I'm not getting it, and I apologize to Jeff, but a photo that appeared in the Louisville Courier-Journal. And again, you can link to that if you go to the Blood Horse article. It's a really cool picture. He was on the roof at Churchill on Derby Day, and he has a picture of the whole field coming down the stretch for the first time, and they're all condensed in between shadows of the twin spires. So a really fun picture, and a great job there. So there are your media Eclipse winners, including Pete Fornatale. And again, he won in the audio multimedia internet category. All right, that'll bring us to the end of this edition of Racing Across America. And as I'm looking up, the NYRA show looks like it's about to kick off. So I'm getting off just in time for a change, because typically I just keep going, and I'm going to wrap it up today. But before we do, I want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Parks Championship Meet. Tune in. As I said when I was talking to Pete, we plan to be down for the Florida Derby at the end of the meet, and we appreciate their support during the championship meet. Again, I'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon. Had some fun yesterday. I tossed out a couple of decent opinions. We'll see if we can do more of the same on this Sunday afternoon. So tune in for that. Otherwise, as I say, with the weather, hunker down, enjoy us, sit on the couch. If you don't have to go out, don't go out. If you do have to go out, try to push it until a little later this afternoon, when the weather is supposed to turn to be a little more favorable for going out and driving. But we look forward to having you join us this afternoon, OTB Live on a Sunday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll see you in a few.
You're- You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.